Thanks for listening to The Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for The Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hi, here we go, Hour 3. Great to have you in. We're live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. By the way, a couple of big breaking stories. Michigan-Ohio State has been canceled, the big game. Some are suggesting on Twitter that Ohio State should just play Texas A&M. I got no problem with it. We all knew college football was going to be a jumbled mess this year. It's ridiculous. Like, they don't have a CEO. There's no centralized sort of information hub and governing body for college football. And this is what happens when you don't have it. This is why UFC caught up to boxing. Because UFC had Dana White, and he made, you didn't have to like Dana White, but this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're doing it, and this is where the fights are at, and this is when they're happening. And boxing had Don King and Bob Arum and a million promoters all with their hands in it trying to govern it. College football needs a CEO. And they don't have one. That's why the NFL's been great with COVID, and the NBA, and hockey, and baseball. They've all been great with it. They have a centralized figure, a uniform centralized figure that makes all the big boy decisions. College football, it's every conference for themselves, and it's been a mess, and this is what you get.
It's a multi-billion dollar business with no one in charge. Seriously. What a shock.
It would go wrong perfectly when you have a massive pandemic. Yeah. Other thing, Jalen Hurts, starter in Philadelphia. Howie Long joins me in 5 minutes, so we'll get to that with Howie Long, the Hall of Famer. First of all, big upset last night. I don't think it's that big because I don't think Pittsburgh's that great, but Washington beat the Steelers. Everybody was surprised. But you know what? I just haven't bought into Pittsburgh over the last month. I haven't. And the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't just lose last night. They're now forcing on a regular basis Big Ben to throw over 50 times. Not good. The injuries are piling up. Not good. They don't even attempt to run the football, not good. And they struggle to put away average teams. Not good. Last night they finally lost. And there are certain things that I look at, and I just see other things. And I'll give you an example. Remember the movie Invincible, Mark Wahlberg, the bartender? It's a true story. He's a bartender, blue-collar guy, loses his wife, and he tries out for the Philadelphia Eagles. A tryout. He's just a regular dude, and he makes the team for a couple years. But when I watched the movie Invincible, it's a fun sports movie, Greg Kinnear, Mark Wahlberg. What I really see is, it's just Rocky with football. It's a tough Philadelphia guy, you know, not making it, has a big dream. The bartender, Rocky, Sylvester Stallone, and they make it in Philadelphia. I can't watch Invincible without seeing Rocky. It's Rocky with a football. And I'm watching the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you know what they are? They're the Patriots last year. Patriots got off to this 8-0 start. We were like, wow. And all of a sudden, the games got closer, and they were asking more of Brady, and the results weren't good. Big Ben's had a passer rating last three games in the 80s, and they were asking more of Brady, and there was a couple of losses, and all of a sudden, you look up, and here's what Pittsburgh is. Early in the year, Ben was 103 passer rating, throwing 35, 36 times a game. 7 yards a pass, 22 touchdowns, 4 picks. Weeks 11 through 13, they're the Patriots. I can't unsee it. And then all of a sudden you looked at the Patriots, and they weren't getting blown out at the end, and Pittsburgh won't get blown out. They were losing close games to Houston. They lost a close game to Kansas City. They lost a close game to Miami. And then they got one and done in the playoffs by Tennessee. They are the Patriots last year. This is exactly what New England was. We paid them so much respect because of the brand and the name and Big Ben and Brady and the coach. They're just not dynamic. Look at them. They can't run. They don't want to make Big Ben throw 45, 55 times. That's what they have to do. They're not doing what they want to do. They're doing what they have to do. I mean, just injuries piling up. Think about this. Mike Tomlin eviscerated the Steelers a week ago. Just called them out. Said the word suck. We suck. What did he do that for? To mobilize the forces. So the fellas like, okay, coach is upset. Focus in. No, they were worse the following week. Because this is what they are. They're not a great football team. They're a good football team. 1 week from now, they face Buffalo. They're going to lose, and when they do, they'll no longer be the top seed. Similar last year to New England. Lost that last game to Miami, and they lost the bye. Similar, when Gronk left, New England really struggled in the pass game, despite Brady. And since Le'Veon Bell has left the Steelers, do you know what they are in rushing? 31st 1 year, 29th the next year, and 29th the following year. They're the same team, invincible and rocky with a football. This is the Patriots last year. It's the same thing. We gave them so much credit. Then you look back at the 8-0 Patriots, and you're like, well, what were the impressive wins? And you look back at the Steelers, and they had one or two, but you're like, it's a bunch of stuff over the Jags and Cowboys, and what am I supposed to be impressed? Oh, that big win over the Bengals? Last year, Patriots crushed the Jets and Giants. They were both awful. The Bengals this year, not good. Cowboys aren't good. And I'm sorry, but I this is what they are. We paid them so much respect for the 8-0 New England start and the 11-0 Pittsburgh start. Watch the games. There's no there. Mike Tomlin after.
We just got to make routine plays routinely. And I say that often, but there's a lot of truth to it. I'm just worried about us fluidly moving the football, whether it's run or pass. We move it how we choose to move it. The way that we chose to move it tonight wasn't fluid enough for us to have victory.
One of my favorite guys ever on a microphone, Mike Tomlin. Please, networks, hire him after he retires. And with that, we bring on the Hall of Famer, 3-time All-Pro, a Super Bowl champ, Hall of Famer for 20 years, 13 in the league with the Raiders, all with the Raiders, Howie Long. You still look fantastic. You're losing weight.
Duct tape and glue.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's the secret.
See, all right, I'm going to throw a couple big breaking news stories at you. One, yeah. Jalen Hurts is starting for the Philadelphia Eagles instead of Wentz. Your reaction is?
To me, it's a bit of a cautionary tale. Being very familiar with Philadelphia, I think Carson Wentz is top 10 talent.
Yeah.
That certainly hasn't played out on the field this year for a number of reasons. They've been decimated by injuries.
Yes.
And it's not just this year, which I think internally makes you want to start to evaluate your process of off-season training.
Thank you.
What you're doing in the gym.
The field.
Yes. And also some of the coaches that have left, some of the assistant coaches. Because, the head coach is the offensive coordinator, but the quarterback coach is the guy that he's the quarterback whisperer on a daily basis, and they've lost some of that. And then you go ahead. I have no problem in Green Bay when you draft a project quarterback for a 37-year-old quarterback in Green Bay. Now, I had a problem with them drafting the running back as high as they did. I think they could have linebacker, wide receiver, whatever. But to draft a quarterback that high, what kind of message is that sending to your 26-year-old quarterback?
Well, you've used this before. Everybody says he's just got to get over it. But as you've told me years ago, you can't have two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in the same room. One sucks all the oxygen out. It's the only position in sports you don't compete against somebody. So that's the reality of NFL quarterback. You draft a quarterback right behind them when they're young and struggling. It's going to be different for them.
And now you have the reality of you've made the move to take him off the field in the middle of a game and put in the young guy. How do you go back? How do you patch this up? How do you move forward next year? And, I'm a big fan of the head coach. I'm a big fan of the front office. I will tell you this. They can't do anything really because of the dead money.
They're trapped.
For the next year. They're trapped. That being said, if this is the guy they really want to go with and they want to move on and they've lost interest in the starting quarterback, I know two teams right off the top of my head that would love to have Carson Wentz.
Name them.
Indianapolis Colts.
Yep.
You know why?
Yeah,
I know. Head coach.
Yeah.
And it's the perfect city for him. He's a
hunt
he's a,
fish.
He's a North Dakota guy. Philadelphia, and I went to school there. Philly's rough.
It is.
It's rough, and it's hard on their athletes, and they brought a championship to that city, and he was a big part of that, although he got injured in the game that we covered out here in L.A. and, stays in the game for two plays. I love his toughness. I love his athletic ability. He can be a bit stubborn. He's not seeing the field for whatever reason. He's not seeing the field the way he has in the past. So They have some decisions to make. I think Doug is a very competent coach. He brought a championship to that city. The GM and Howie Roseman, I think they're going to buy some time with that. This is I think you just write this year off.
That's right.
Yeah, like Dallas. Dallas just got decimated.
Just write the year off. Yeah, it happens. Yeah. They've won 9 division titles in 20 years. It's a good organization. Yep. So it's interesting. Last year, the Raiders surprised us early and then looked fatigued late and kind of fell apart. This year, I was all into them. And then forget the win over the Jets. And I just was kind of sitting there the other day, watched them against the Jets, and I'm like, I feel like last year. I don't know if it's Gruden's style. It's the running attack. It's very old school football. But the Raiders do not look this morning like they did 4 weeks ago. Am I overreacting to that?
I think, you know, the question is, were you overreacting 4 weeks ago? You know, I think there's no question in my mind that the defense has to get better.
It's a limited defense at this point.
It's a very limited defense at this point. Their first round pick from last year stepped up and played really well versus the Jets. There was no Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is a, and people might not realize it's a Waller.
Waller's uncoverable.
Waller's, you know, Tony and I talk about it. Waller's, and of course, Tony's one of the old guys on the lawn. Get off my lawn. You know, where, they don't touch the tight ends nowadays. But he's great. Yeah. You know, with the qualifier that you don't touch the tight ends. He's great. I think the quarterback making that kind of a throw at the end of the game in that situation can have a carryover. I think you get Josh Jacobs back in the game. They get their right tackle back, who is like a wave hitting the beach.
Yeah, that's Trent
Brown.
Trent Brown.
He's like a wave hitting the beach in the run game. I mean, he's 6'8", 390.
Yeah.
You know, try stopping that. So that really sets your entire team up. And when you're running the football successfully, you've got the play action pass, it keeps your defense off the field. That was the struggle, I think, in the past couple of weeks.
All right, that's fair enough. That's a good point. Yeah. Trent Brown is the biggest NFL player, by the way. He is officially the biggest NFL player.
He's big.
Yeah. So you can win. You know, there's a lot of fall. Nick Saban always calls it inner scoreboard, outer scoreboard. That Warren Buffett talks about. A lot of guys chatter. What do you feel inside? So Cleveland's 9-3. But do they believe they got blown out by the Steelers? They got manhandled by the Ravens. You weren't on a lot of bad teams, but when you're in a losing culture and you have a good year, do you believe this morning Cleveland thinks they can match up with Pittsburgh and run the ball and beat them?
Well, at some point, you know, that has to happen for them to take the next step. And prior to this past weekend, you know, we said this is a litmus test game.
For Baker, the franchise,
for Baker,
everybody.
The franchise. And I said on the show, Tennessee's a tough football team.
Yeah.
They're a reflection of their head coach. The running back is out of this world. But when you score that many points early, you take that running back out of the game.
That's right.
And if Tennessee has a weakness, it's their lack of pass rush and their lack of coverage, particularly on third down.
Yeah.
And the question I had on our show Sunday was, can Baker make big throws in key situations to take advantage of that? And he did.
Yep.
Now the next step is you've been getting your lunch money taken by Pittsburgh and Baltimore for
years. So
we're talking 18 years since this team's been in the playoffs. And Cleveland, I think, as a city and as a fan base, is kind of, you know, they're kind of Eeyore. They're whatever can go wrong is going to go wrong.
I totally get it.
And you've got to buy in. Baker's not a runaround guy.
Baker, thank you.
You know, he's not that. And I think he's frenetic when he does that. And that's not who he is. I think he's a rhythm thrower. The play action pass, the run game, their offensive line, if you take the time to watch them.
Oh, their O-line's great.
Hey, in the run game and the pass game, and they're built for the long haul. So you get a couple more pieces and, you know, your defense, which is, you know, fairly good, and I think when you're running the football, your defense always benefits.
Yeah. I'm beloved in Cleveland. You may not know that.
People, are you?
Well, people talk
you're
about me.
You're beloved in Virginia, too. My wife hated you because you bad-mouthed UVA so much.
Well, but now it's turned.
Just because they could spell.
Yeah. You know, some people like me. Same way at home, pal. I'll tell you that when I go home. Sometimes
trust
she
me.
Loves me, sometimes they don't. Here, Seattle. And Pete's a little flaky, but I love him. And
me too.
And I watched him last week, and I'm like, oh, boy. I don't know. Last week, I swear to God, I thought they solved their pass rush with Dunlap, and LJ Collier's a young player. Tell me how it's going to end for Seattle this year. What do you see? Because it's like a baseball team with a bad bullpen. When your O-line can get pushed around, you've got a ceiling. What is Seattle, and how is it going to end?
Well, the defense was historically bad for a long period of time.
It was, 2 months.
The run game without Carson, which I think really is – I think Seattle's better. I think Russ is better. I think the defense is better. I'm big on the run game.
Especially with Pete's teams.
Yes.
Even in college.
And Carson is, to me, an identity changer there, and it benefits Russell a lot. There are times when Russell has had the entire football team on his shoulders and he pressed too hard and threw interceptions and turned the football over, and getting Carson back in some form. I think this past week they ran into an extremely well-coached, extremely complex defense post-snap. And that forced Russell, who's one of the smartest quarterbacks in the league, to pause and make poor decisions, and they just couldn't get in a rhythm. Judge has done a really good job with Giants. And it's what you'd expect. I mean, in the past years, we've seen coaches come from New England and not be successful. These young coaches that are coming out of New England right now, you look at Vrabel, you look at Flores down in Miami, and you look at this guy with the Giants. They've taken it. It's the equivalent of taking that postgraduate course at Harvard that some of the players in the league go and sit in on for a summer. That's what coaching in New England is like.
So you went to Villanova. You were a tough guy. You had I don't know if it was a tough childhood, but you're a tough guy. But what's interesting, your kids didn't have the same life as you did. Your kids grew up, but you guys had some money, but you were a tough kid. When you were at Villanova, obviously that's a smart guy school. So I look at you and your tough upbringing, and take me back to Howie Long at 20 years old.
Oh.
Because everybody looks at you, the glasses. My wife's always like, God, he looks great. He's so smart. And it's like his wife's an attorney. His kids are brilliant. What were you like at 20?
Well, I got there. It was one of those situations where I'd lived with a number of different relatives. I had gone from house to house. And I was fortunate that I had an extended family that was...
But you were a tough guy. You got in fights.
I wasn't a tough guy till I was... It was like kind of like Kyle. My Kyle is a lot like me in that sense where I didn't figure it out till I was about 14 or 15. And I said, wait a second, I don't have to take crap from anybody.
Yeah.
And I never played organized sports.
Ever?
Ever. And moved
out.
Isn't that
crazy?
We had desegregation in Boston, and we had the busing riots.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, who I was living with at the time, asked my Uncle Billy, who had two kids and two adopted kids, to take me in. He working in the projects in South Boston. And how he took me in, the older I get, the more I really appreciate
it. So where'd you go to school?
I went to school at a high school called Milford High School, and the coach sees me walking down the hallway and says, who are you? And I'm a 13-year-old, 6'3", 190-pound kid. And I said, I'll come out. I had to figure out how to put the equipment on and do all that.
And were you good instantly?
No, I was terrible.
So when did you – so Villanova gave you a scholarship, so you did
probably my senior year. I had played with a guy named Joe Restic, who ended up going on to Notre Dame, captaining Notre Dame. When you see the movie Rudy and he's checking down the list, Joe Restic's name's on the list.
Yeah.
And his dad was the coach at Harvard, and he was on the selection committee for an all-star game that's no longer in existence called the Blue-Gray game down in Alabama.
Oh, I remember. I watched it for 30 years.
Right. It's on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So I get a call. Some player gets hurt, and I get a call.
You played in the Blue-Gray game.
So here's the real irony of it. So I get a call, and I go down there on a Monday, and I said, sure, I'll come down. A player gets hurt, I'll come down. And I had never played. I think we played on TV once. And the coach of the North team was Jimmy Johnson.
No way.
Yes.
At Oklahoma State?
At Oklahoma State.
You got to be kidding me.
And I win the MVP. And, when you go to a big school, you have one pro day, and all the teams come in.
That's right.
I ran on the front lawn of my dorm. I ran 35 times. I mean, we didn't have an indoor gym that was big enough to run a 40. And on rainy, snowy days, when I remember Pittsburgh came in, and I really wanted to go to Pittsburgh, I started in the hallway, catty corner, and had to run across the gym, Jake Nevin's gym, right down to where Rolly Massimino's office was and run into the wall because there wasn't enough room to stop you after the 40 yards.
Okay, what was Jimmy Johnson like? We got 2 minutes. What was Jimmy Johnson?
He was exactly how he is now.
The same hair and everything?
Yeah, same hair, a little bit thinner. He was funny because he gave me, I thought it was, you know, going to Villanova, you know, he gave me $7 to get a pizza, and I thought that was kind of a junior varsity payoff or something, you know, when in reality he wanted a pizza. He said he's still waiting for the pizza or the $7.
Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, that's an incredible.
We go way back.
That is amazing.
He's the best. You know, having that guy sit next to you on a set, he's the greatest coach builder, I think, of a football team.
So when I started doing this Sunday show, which is I got to get up. You know, I don't want to get up at 5 in the morning again.
Sure.
I'm on a life, right? So I do it. But the reason I do it, well, Krista Thompson's a friend for a long time. But I come in and Jimmy Johnson, I used to hound him for 15 minutes. I just ask him questions about life and football.
Well,
he knows everybody.
Yeah, and we've talked, you know, we talked. You know, my boys started out, when I started out here, my boys were 9-6-5 or 9-5-4. And two of them ended up playing in the NFL. And, you know, there were contract situations where I'd always, the guy I call would
Jimmy.
Be Jimmy. And, you know, Jimmy gave me sage advice. And, you know, the Dak situation to me was kind of a microcosm of that, you know, bird in the hand. I want 4 years. They want five.
Right.
What's the and my question is always, what's the difference in your life? And Marvin Demoff, who was both of my boy's agent, who I think is one of the smartest people I've ever been in a room with, Marvin Demoff would say he'd draw you up a kind of a schedule in your money portfolio.
Right.
If you get this much money at 65 years old, you've got $80 million in the bank.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to hold out, you want to take a risk for a year to get 87, what's the difference in your life with 87 in the bank versus 80? Not a lot.
I say this all the time. Last night I had sushi, cigars, a cocktail in the NFL.
You're happy.
Happy?
I told you when you came here, this is the best place to work. Remember?
Most days.
Yep.
Sometimes you get a little pushback from the guys upstairs, but most days. You got to push those guys around once in a while.
We don't really talk to upstairs that much.
You know what? And we're better for it. Good seeing you.
Wow.
Hey, no, I kid because I care. All right. Howie Long, Hall of Famer. You're only the second guest we've had in 7 months on a chair.
Yeah, it's great. I was out here doing something for Ford and went out and surprised a fan from the Raiders.
You did?
A fan program.
Oh, God, that stuff's great.
It was really, really, I wasn't sure how it would go, but the guy was he just about had a heart attack.
I love stuff
that. So I'm not going to tell you who it is, but, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Good seeing you, man.
Good seeing you. Good seeing you, Joy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Discovery Plus streaming service starts next year, U.S. only. Discovery Plus, exclusive originals and real-life entertainment from some of your favorite brands. Also, one scoop every morning, mdrivestart.com, chocolate mousse, protein shake, lean muscle recovery. Very good stuff. Don't let age define you. MDriveStart.com. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Just a quick update. Woj tweeted that James Harden has arrived in Houston and tested, according to the NBA protocol, today.
Tested for COVID.
Yes, he took his test at the Toyota Center.
All right.
So he is in Houston.
All right, that's good.
So ESPN released their rankings for the best NBA players for 2020-21 season, and Tyler Hero was ranked 59.
Was that good or bad according to Twitter?
I don't know what Twitter's saying. I feel like this is an appropriate space. I actually feel like it's I don't want to say high, but it feels...
I think he's low.
Yeah, like I feel like this is a good space for him.
If he was available on the market, would you take him or Lonzo Ball? Give me a break. You take Tyler Hero in 1 second, he can shoot.
I would. I would take him over Lonzo Ball,
I mean, nothing against Goran Dragic. If they're both on the market, one is free and can shoot threes. The other is expensive and has a history of getting hurt.
Tyler Hero was a rookie.
Yeah, Tyler Hero at 59... Your value is ultimately exposed or unveiled on the market. Everybody wants Tyler Hero. Cheap, can hit a three, coachable.
Plays completely fearless.
Thank you. That's a great point. And was, for a rookie, was huge in big spots.
He started 8 of 55 games played, shot 43% from the field, 39% from three-point, and averaged 13.5 points per game, 4.1 rebounds, and 2.2 assists.
Tell me a team in the NBA wouldn't take him today. On the market, I can tell you a bunch that wouldn't take Zach LaVine. I can tell you a bunch that wouldn't take Lonzo Ball. I can't tell you one who wouldn't take Tyler Hero.
He did outrank Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Dennis Schroeder.
I'm not sure I love that one.
They ranked 77th and 79th, and DeMar DeRozan, it was ranked 82nd. That feels really low for DeRozan.
Everybody in the league is looking for that. Everybody wants that.
I'm very excited for the Heat next year. I know the Lakers are all complaining because they don't have a lot of time in between seasons.
No,
I don't hear any complaining from the Heat, but that's another story.
It's world champion problems.
Yeah. I mean, look, like it's COVID. They're figuring it all out. Yeah. Like it's fine. The Heat and the Lakers are going to be up against it as far as how long they've had off. But the East is going to be really interesting. Like I think Brooklyn is an incredible story, and I really can't wait for the NBA season to start again. So the New York Jets fired defensive coordinator Greg Williams on Monday. And Adam Gase said that the decision to fire Williams after the Raiders, he said that he made the decision to fire him after Sunday's game.
It was the best thing for our team moving forward. Organizationally, you know, we had a discussion this morning and we felt like that was the best move for us to make. Greg and myself talked for close to an hour this morning. I mean, obviously, he wasn't happy. I mean, like most of us are when this happens, but that's our profession.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, listen, Adam's going to be gone in a month, so I still contend they're keeping Adam around because in the end, they feel less likely to win a game and more likely to retain the number one spot with him.
I don't think anyone believes, including Adam Gase, that he's going to be there after this season
he
is
can't
over.
Possibly.
It's a disaster. They're 0-12, fourth in the AFC East.
Yeah.
Their final games are the Seahawks, Rams, Browns, and Patriots.
Oh, so, good luck. Good Lord.
I don't see a win in their future anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I think that they, because we've seen this before with Greg Williams. So I think that they don't want to make it, they didn't want to make the move to fire Gase during the season, switch to Greg Williams or another coordinator, and the Jets mess up and win a couple games. You can get a little momentum when you have an interim coach. We've seen it around the league and you see it all the time. And then, you know, there starts to be conversation if they should stay there, but I don't think that that's the case. I think they just want to finish off the season with no wins. Make sure you lock up Trevor Lawrence. Greg Williams was going to likely be gone anyway because a new coach is going to bring in their guys. And I don't think that Greg Williams is a bad defensive coordinator. I think he's going to end up somewhere else in the league. Adam Gase, I'm not so sure because he's had two stints. I think this is the end of his head coaching
career. He's done.
Yeah,
he's done.
So Anthony Lynn will remain the Chargers coach, at least for now. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network said Monday that no head coaching change is imminent. The organization has a tremendous amount of respect for Lynn and would prefer to evaluate everything at the end of the season.
Yeah.
I also agree with this. I don't think it makes... I'm not a huge fan of firing coaches midseason unless it's a toxic situation or you're positive that you're going to get ahead of the game hiring some massive college coach that is going to start looking at his opportunities.
Well, people have a lot of respect for Anthony and the team plays hard. Now, last week was man overboard, but until last week, they played hard and were in all their games.
Yeah, I mean, things have fallen apart this year. Again, this is a COVID year. It's not his first year coaching there, obviously, but this is a COVID year, so things could be affected in that way. He does have a rookie quarterback who's playing well, but they're not winning. So
yeah.
there's some factor to it. He's been coaching for 20 years. I'm not sure who is the right fit for this team, though. Like, some of the names that are out there are Jack Del Rio. I don't love that. Joe Brady, Eric Bieniemy.
Joe Brady's interesting.
Josh McDaniels and Robert Saleh. But don't you say you want a head coach
to come in
here?
Yeah, I would. I'll say it again. Brian Kelly, Notre Dame, Urban Meyer. They don't get a phone call? I'm sorry. They've won everywhere. And both of them turn stuff around like in 15 games. I don't get it.
Brian Kelly wants this job.
I don't know. Who wouldn't want that job?
Brian Kelly's at Notre Dame. He could be there forever.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe he wants to.
They have like one golf course.
I mean, it's very cold there.
All right, Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Alan Lazard, Aaron Rodgers' second favorite wide receiver to throw to. He's going to be joining us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper lathes, real world proven. Walmart's where you get them, last two times longer than other blades. They test them. Alaska to Argentina, they're good. So Alan Lazard's interesting. So he was a big recruit, like 4 or 5 star recruit guy, and everybody wanted him. Notre Dame wanted him. Stanford wanted him. So you know he's a smart guy, and he chose Iowa State. And then he goes from Ames, Iowa, and he ends up in Green Bay. He didn't exactly hit the lottery in the nightlife for a single guy. So we're going to bring him on, Alan Lazard, who is now with Davante Adams creating a massive tandem, which is very difficult to defend. And he is joining us now live. So I want to just start with the obvious question. Iowa State, nothing against the Cyclones. Notre Dame wanted you. Stanford wanted you. And you chose Iowa State. All these people were coveting you. Why Iowa State?
Well, you know, really the big reason why I chose Iowa State is when I came down to it, you know, I had those other offers and everything, but when I closed my eyes and I pictured myself playing in a collegiate uniform, I only saw myself in the Cardinal in gold. So that's how I really truly knew that Iowa State was a place for me to be. And ultimately, I knew what my end goal was, which was to come to the NFL and make an impact and leave some history here. So where I went to collegially really didn't matter. It was just part of the journey, and was it's going to be part of the process.
Has it made it easier going from small town Ames to Green Bay? Because for a lot of guys, if you grew up in the big city, it would be culture shock to be in Green Bay. Yeah. But you go small town to small town. Do you ever think, in a weird way, it actually has made it easier for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell people all the time, Green Bay is a glorified Ames, Iowa. You know, Ames, you know, it's the culture, the community, the surroundings, you know, the fan base is unbelievable, and you really can't beat it. But the only thing that's really missing is the championships and, you know, the trophies there. You come here to Green Bay and you see so much history, you see the Lombardi trophies, you see the retired numbers, you see the winning success that they've had here. And besides that, you know, I really see a lot of similar things.
So you went undrafted and you end up with Aaron Rodgers. So you were in a first or a second round pick. People overlooked you, and you end up with this all-time world-class Hall of Fame talent. Did you feel like... I mean, Aaron Rodgers, we got a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 receivers in camp. Did you feel like you had to earn his respect when you first showed up in Green Bay?
Absolutely. That was my first goal when I first arrived in Green Bay, was to let the players there and ultimately the coaches and front office know that, you know, I meant business and I was serious about working, and I want to do whatever I could to help the team win. So as soon as I stepped foot inside Lambeau, and, you know, I just kind of put my head down, kept quiet, and did whatever I can to stand out.
Aaron Rodgers, I was just watching that picture. He's like a dad. He's wiping the stuff off your brow there, taking care. You guys seemed to – he had made a public comment a couple years ago, very early in your career, that he was into your style. Why do you think he trusted you? He doesn't trust a lot of young receivers. Like Aaron, is he can be hard on guys. He's very demanding. Why did he trust you early?
You know, I think Aaron just demands so high of himself, and he sees that in me as well. And, you know, he knows that I'll go out there and I'll do whatever it takes to win. And no matter what it takes, you know, I'm going to lay it out there on the line, and that he can go out there and trust me. And ultimately, I'm going to help him make plays.
Yeah. You're obviously, you're a 6'5 guy. I'm watching your tape. You're tall. Most people, if they could play basketball or football, Charles Barkley always says, I played football for one day, I got tackled, and I chose basketball. You could have played basketball at a very high level. Why did you choose football over hoops?
Ultimately, you know, I think it wasn't the commitment I had at the time back in high school. My coach, Brad Bjorken, who's my high school coach, was a huge part of my success football wise because he taught me so much basketball on how to play the game. So I have a lot to give to credit to him. But ultimately, you know, I think once I kind of realized and sat down and looked at the offers and everything, I knew I could go out and do a lot more damage on football than I could basketball.
So without giving away any secrets, Aaron's a very smart guy. You're a smart guy because you got offered Stanford and Notre Dame. So I know you're a smart guy. And when Aaron's at the line and he is, do you guys ever have nonverbal communication, looks? Because Aaron, it's a big cat and mouse game, Alan, as you know. You got guys looking at you. Like, are there little tricks week to week Aaron does with you, nonverbal stuff?
Absolutely. You know, I think that's what Aaron does better than anyone else is communication. whether it's player to player or player to coach. You know, I think he does a really good job of leading the offense in our team. So when he's doing his cadences, when he's giving you that look at the line, and you know he's going to come to you, he's going to give you that certain Hollywood look, you know, you better get on your horse and get going. So he's just done a great job of communicating to me and everyone else and just really being the leader and orchestrator of our offense.
When you worked, when you got there, so you got there 28, you've been there, what, 2 years or three?
2 years.
Okay. So, you know, you knew who Aaron Rodgers was. You'd watched football on television. And you played with good players you in college. But was there a practice early with Aaron Rodgers and you were like, oh, brother, this guy's arm. Like, what was the first moment that you realized, like, Aaron's just different than other quarterbacks?
Yeah, so I'll give you two examples. One would be the first experience I had. He actually threw me my first pass. It was one-on-one in camp last year. It was actually the same route that I had caught the 31-yarder versus the Eagles this past weekend. He just threw a nice little teddy bear out there for me, and it just fit right perfectly in stride, and I was able to peel away from the DB and score. And then go back to last Sunday, and you see him throw that bomb to Marquez. He throws it from the 26-yard line all the way down to, I believe, the opposite side of the field, 14 or so. So for him to still be able to do that, you know, there's always days, every single day he kind of wows me and really impresses everyone.
So you guys in Green Bay were 13-3 last year. You're very good. Now, the downside to being great is the standards in Green Bay are very high. Are there times now? Now you're one of his guys. You and Devontae, you're one of his guys. Does Aaron have to occasionally bark at you? Are there times? Because now you're no longer a kid. Like, he needs you. When's the last time Aaron had to bark at you? When you broke off a route the wrong way?
Yeah, you know, I think Aaron, he definitely gets on my case every once in a while. Obviously, only being my second year playing with him, it's not to the same level of communication and chemistry that him and Devontae have. So every day when I'm watching them, those two guys work, especially, you know, this past Sunday, just watching them go after it, you know, I'm picking up little things here and there. But he definitely, with his standard, you know, I think that's just what makes him so great is that he realizes that in myself, I have such a high standard that my standard's so high that I don't want to let him down. So I'm going to do whatever it takes and then some more to make sure that I do my job.
By the way, Matt LaFleur's very, very young. Last year, rookie year, second year. Do you notice a difference from Matt LaFleur last year to this year? Does he carry himself different? Does the locker room buy into him? What's the difference Matt LaFleur last year to this year?
Absolutely. You know, I've seen a huge change in Coach LaFleur this year. He's just coming into his own, getting comfortable. And like I said, you know, Aaron's just such a great communicator. And him and developing that relationship with Coach LaFleur, and it's just spread throughout the entire building. And you see the energy. You see how much fun that we're having. And, you know, I think it's just it's really great with the connection that they have together.
Finally, it's Tuesday night. You live in Green Bay. You're single. What will you do tonight? What will you do tonight?
See, Mondays and Tuesdays are my weekend, so there's completely relaxation, turn off the TV, just kind of hanging out, vibing, focusing on myself and my thoughts, getting prepared for the week. And then, you know, once Wednesday hits, then this work week starts and it's time to get to business.
Man, that sounds really grown up. That's incredibly mature. I think you'd be out tonight swinging, having fun, and you just gonna be listening to music and chilling.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of Wiz Khalifa, a lot of Larry June, Five, definitely. Some good music tonight.
How about that, Joy? I've heard of all those.
It's also COVID.
Oh, yeah, the COVID thing. Yeah, what a downer. All right, Alan Lazard, great having you on, man. Continued success to you and Devontae and the guys.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah, the COVID thing, you got to chill a lot.
Yeah, I mean, this is... I mean, I don't know what the nightlife in Green Bay is on Mondays and Tuesdays usually, but
it's one of the only professional cities I've never been to. I've been in Memphis.
I haven't either. Yeah,
I haven't been in Green Bay. Apparently, there's only like 250,000. I think it's the smallest city, smallest town in the country that has a pro team. Obviously,
I went to Wisconsin for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I've been there. The golf course.
What is it called?
Yeah, I've been to Wisconsin. I've been to Madison like three times. Big party school. Yeah, my stepdaughter wants to go. I'm like, slow down. Like, big party school.
Well, you know, you got to have something to do.
Yeah. There's a lot to do there. Most involves draft beer. by the way, streaming service coming in 2021, coming soon. It's called Discovery Plus. All the shows you love from your favorite brands like Food Network, HTV, Discovery Channel, and exclusive originals. So there we are. If you did not see our herd hierarchy, you want to do this here, Alex, or you want to show it, speak for yourself? All right, we'll do it after the break. So I got last night I went on Instagram.
You did.
I did. And I was feeling myself, and I took I don't think I took a shot. I said I was demanding an apology from Steeler fans who have been so hostile toward me. And it is, I think it may be, the most downloaded thing I've ever done. People, and I just, all I said was, you owe me an apology.
Let me see how many views you have right now.
Twitter, I have 500,000 just for a 30-second.
Well, listen, you know, maybe my pettiness has rubbed off on you.
Yeah,
you have over 100,000 views.
I have.
And 2,000 comments. What's that cocktail? Looks yummy.
It was a Tito's club soda splash of fresh organic OJ.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you.
Like a screwdriver?
I had more than one. I had promised one. I went a little crazy last night. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. The Herd.